I would like to welcome you to this edition of the program on ButtonSports.com here at the final day of March in 2014. We've come a long way, but we still have a long way to go. We are in the doldrums of the offseason. However, spring football has started, of course, surrounding college football season. 150 days until the 2014 campaign gets kicked off, a little under 5 months until that gets started. College basketball, of course, at its pinnacle, as the Final Four is now set. We'll mention that in a moment, as well as Major League Baseball starting today, final day, March 31st, here in 2014, final day of March. We have a few topics that we want to dive into today, one surrounding an SEC quarterback that has been suspended indefinitely at one of the major schools. We'll get into that story in a moment, as well as the National Labor Relations Board ruling on Northwestern football players and what that might mean for the sport and college football. It's quite a few topics to talk about. We're going to do so here in a concise manner on this Monday as we get started, as we are now, as I said, 150 days out from college football season. But we will begin to talk about the upcoming season in full swing in the next couple of months. We'll start with the news out of Texas A&M, and it's never good in the middle of spring when you learn that one of your quarterbacks has been suspended indefinitely. But following an arrest early Friday morning, Texas A&M quarterback Kenny Hill, who would have been a sophomore this season, and he's competing for the starting job, was arrested before 3 a.m. on a public intoxication charge. This was reported by the Bryan College Station Eagle. Hill was one of the top candidates, of course, to replace none other than Johnny Manziel this year. And Texas A&M is lacking some continuity at quarterback, and we'll talk about their situation upcoming more in the next couple of months. But as spring unfolds, you never want to see one of your contenders for the job, and certainly a talented quarterback like Hill, become suspended. But that is what he has been suspended indefinitely, and we'll see if he gets a chance to redeem himself at some future point for Kevin Sumlin and the Aggies. But that's his position where Texas A&M does not need to lose anyone. The Final Four is now set. Florida beat Dayton 62-52 Saturday, as well as Wisconsin in a thriller in overtime beat Arizona 64-63. I know we don't talk much college basketball here, but there's a specific reason I'm mentioning this. Sunday, UConn beat Michigan State 60-54, and Kentucky downed Michigan 75-72, and this is Kentucky's third Final Four in 4 years. And Florida, by the way, it's their fifth Final Four since 2007. And the Big Ten, which went into the Elite Eight with three teams into the Final Four, they had three different chances: Michigan, Michigan State, and Wisconsin. They were able to go one of those three. The SEC came in with two chances, and they went 2-for-2. So the SEC has two teams in the Final Four. And again, the league is not—it's not at the top in college basketball. No one has any illusion there. However, the SEC is probably a little bit better than some might give it credit for being at times. And I think two Final Four teams certainly lends itself to that point. As well as Tennessee, which was the 11th seed, was able to win their play-in game and go all the way to the Sweet 16 before they were knocked off by Michigan, which, of course, was who Kentucky beat Sunday. So that's where college basketball is. SEC, two teams in the Final Four, and there is a chance that Kentucky and Florida could play for the national championship game. Now, that would be interesting, given that the SEC is it receives so much heat in basketball, and, of course, we know that the SEC is the king in football, and I think some people may view basketball as a sport where maybe we don't have any SEC dominance. But this year, especially if Florida and Kentucky make it into that championship game, it's going to be hard to argue that once again the SEC dominated in the college basketball postseason as well. The National Labor Relations Board in Chicago ruled that Northwestern football players have the ability to form their own union. It's an interesting story that has been going around the last week, and a lot of people commenting on whether or not the unionization movement will be profitable for college athletics or not. And one column that I found interesting was by Sally Jenkins, who writes for the Washington Post, and has, of course, she has been outspoken on many different issues in sports and always has an interesting take. She writes an article entitled "The NLRB Ruling on Northwestern Football Players Opens Up More Questions then answer. She starts it by calling the premise that college athletes are exploited and aggrieved fundamentally specious. She says that is at the heart of the Northwestern Union movement, and that is specious to say that they are exploited and aggrieved. She goes on to say, yes, college players are expected to practice and play hard in exchange for the privilege of attending a university without having to incur $250,000 in student loans, but that's the deal. She says Kane Coulter, who is the quarterback who has been the front man of this particular movement at Northwestern, who kind of led the charge to get this on the table, she says that he and his peers aren't laborers due compensation. They are highly privileged scholarship winners who get a lot of valuable stuff for free. And it's an interesting topic. Should college athletes receive compensation? Should they be able to form their own unions? And I think that one of the things that will evolve as this continues to be discussed, and it is by no means over. The NCAA will have a say. This could likely go all the way to the Supreme Court, and I imagine it will at some point. But if they do rule that college athletes can be compensated and that they can form their unions and do everything that normal employees of major firms and corporations can do, then what are the tax implications of that? And I think I'm not sure that college athletes who currently are getting scholarships know what kind of taxes that will be due and what they will have to pay and how they will have to go about doing that. And then you have health insurance and all of the other implications that we know are standard when employing someone at a corporation. And this goes for all athletes, and it will not stop with college football players. College football players may be the most publicized athletes right now. They may get the most, to use their own term, exposure. But it's not going to stop there because of Title IX and other equal rights legislation. They'll have to have women's sports be compensated as well as other male sports. Baseball players, basketball players, and lesser publicized sports. So Tom Izzo was quoted, Michigan State head basketball coach. He says, I think sometimes we take rights to a whole new level. I think there's a process in rights, and you earn that. We always try to speed the process up. I said to my guys, there's a reason you have to be 35 to be president. That's the way I look at it, talking about whether or not they should have the right to form a union. And you have, obviously, opinions on both sides of this issue. Many people believe that college athletes should have the right, should be paid, first of all, and should have the right to form their own union. And I do think that it is taking this to sport as a whole, and not just college football, but college athletics in general, and the NCAA down a road that it is going to be very, very dangerous for the health of the game at some point. I mean, but the NCAA should have been prepared for this. When the term student-athlete was dubbed more than a half century ago, it was by people who knew, foresaw, that this kind of an issue would come up at some point. So now we're seeing it come to fruition, and I think at some point the NCAA is going to have to come up with a response. They're going to have to reasonably think through these situations and say, how can we meet the needs without destroying these games that we've had? And the NCAA is going to have to be reasonable about this, because you're dealing now with a political media firestorm, and if you handle it the wrong way, which the NCAA is very good at doing, let's not try to bounce around. I mean, I've had, I've had dealings with NCAA representatives on my blog, which amounts to nothing in the sports media world, and they've attacked me before. So the NCAA is very bad at PR. How are they going to deal with this is the question. And I think it's a defining issue for Mark Emmert. Well, Mark Emmert's regime has already been defined to some degree, but this is how the NCAA handles this, because I do think it's potentially dangerous for the sport. I think it's potentially dangerous for college athletics in general. And I think it's incumbent upon the NCAA to come up with a solution, and it will be interesting to see where this goes, where the presidents go, where the commissioners go, Love to hear Mike Slive's thoughts on this, Commissioner of the SEC, as well as a number of other people. But I think it's a major topic and one that needs to be addressed, and we will continue to do it more here at BunSports.com. You can find this article, I link to it on the front page, by Sally Jenkins in the Washington Post. I think it's worth a read for any college football fan who is passionate about the sport and concerned about where it may be headed. I'm Jacob Bunn. I hope that you will have a nice week. Man, the pollen is out in force already here in the Deep South. I know it's got me. But we will continue to talk about spring issues as well as look forward to the 2014 college football season, which is now 150 days away.